Oasis on 2FM.
Well, a big thank you to both Johnny B and Africa O'Connell for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, July 12th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7, Paul Curry is in studio to keep an eye on St. Pat's in European action, and we'll reflect on Shamrock Rovers' dismal display in Tallaght last night. Sticking with Association Football, Fergal Brennan will be dialing in with all the latest transfer news. In Gaelic games, Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray will set us up for a big weekend in the Camogie Championship and also in the Ladies Football Championship, and we'll have the latest as female players step up their protests against the governing bodies. All that plus the latest news headlines makes up the show as always. If you want to get in touch, you can text us 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. It's great to have your company on this Wednesday evening. Nadine Doherty and Paul Curry standing across from me. Nadine, how are you?
I'm great, Shane. How are you?
I'm very well. Paul Curry, how are you, sir?
Very good. Just downloading the St. Pat's app here.
Oh, very good. So you'll be keeping us up to date with Doolange versus St. Pat's at 6:30. Free to download for anyone that wants to watch the match. Or tenner on LOI TV, if you're that way inclined. So the choice is yours. There are two options there. There are platforms there to watch St. Pat's in Europe. We will be previewing that in a couple of minutes' time, and we'll be reviewing a disappointing night for Shamrock Rovers. Couple of news headlines. Sticking with soccer, Republic of Ireland manager Vera Powell confirmed Katie McCabe is fully fit and expressed satisfaction with the training facilities as the squad landed at their Women's World Cup base at Meakin Park in Brisbane. So no signs of a Saipan state facilities, thankfully. Powell and the players held an open training session at the new base today as they continue their preparations for their historic opener against the host Australia in 8 days' time. And in fact, let's hear from Irish manager now, Vera Powell.
We've settled in really well. We had a fantastic travel, and the first few days we had to get used, of course, of the time zones and the jet lag, but we've had a very good jet lag protocol, and we feel that we're getting sharper and sharper. We are in an amazing hotel with all the facilities and balanced in a way that it's working perfectly, and the facility, it looks fantastic, but we still have to put a foot on the pitch. It's the first day that FIFA opened the official training pitches, so we'll see what the players say afterwards, but it looks amazing and the branding is fantastic and it gives this real World Cup feeling, and on the 20th of July we'll see where we stand.
Just over a week away from the World Cup, all matches live here on 2FM. Nadine, Paul, are we confident?
I just hope that they perform to their potential, Shane. You know, I think that's what everybody hopes, and that they return with no regrets, because, you know, for some players it is a once in a lifetime. I really hope they score goals, because, you know, going out there as a fan or as a family member, obviously it's a huge celebration just getting there, but to have something massive to celebrate, like a World Cup goal, I mean, that would just be amazing. Great to hear that everything's up to standard, as you would expect, as it should be. But unfortunately for female athletes, it's not always the case. And we'll discuss that later on in the programme. So it's really refreshing to hear Vera Powell speak about that. And listen, our group, you just don't know at this stage, Shane, because Nigeria are going through a whole lot off the pitch, as are Canada. Similarly, you know, they're both in financial disputes with their federation. So you would hope that for our sake, that might detract away from their preparations. And you just never know for Ireland. You know, it is a big ask. I mean, it's a really, really tough group. And obviously Australia being the host, that does come with a certain level of pressure, comes with a certain level of distraction as well. So listen, the Irish team are going out there with no pressure whatsoever. And I think that's the best place to be in. But I really, my big hope for them is they just perform to their potential and they're no regrets.
Yeah. No pressure, no regrets, Paul.
Yeah, I would echo absolutely everything that Nadine has said just there. I think performances will be good. I think that is one thing that we've gotten with Vera Powell, is that we are always well set up. We're very difficult to beat, and I guess there's a game plan and there's a know-how from the players of what it is they're looking to do. Performances and results might be two very different things for Shane in this competition, just with the group. Like, if you look around at any of the other groups, you probably give us a bit of a chance of picking up 4 to 6 points, but just the way we've been drawn against Australia and Canada, there's every possibility that we don't have any points heading into that last fixture. And that could be the same could be true for Nigeria, just with how good both of those sides are. But I agree with what Nadine said. There's a lot of pressure on Australia here to perform. It's going to be a sold out first game. There's going to be a lot of pressure on their shoulders to perform and get out of the group and go deep into this competition. Ireland are a tricky team to play against, and hopefully we can cause an upset there. But I'm confident we'll get good performances.
Here's hoping. So yeah, not long to wait until we find out. Other news headlines: Dundalk's Patrick Hooban has been named the SSE Artistic Soccer Writers Ireland Player of the Month for June. Hooban hit 6 goals en route to becoming the club's all-time record goal scorer. The striker hit a hat-trick against UCD in the Maybank holiday as Dundalk embarked on a 5-match winning streak to close out the month. At Wimbledon, 6th seed Ons Jabeur came from a set-down to defeat 3rd seed Alina Rybakina by 2 sets to 1, 6-7, 6-4, 6-1. Jabeur will meet Aryna Sabalenka in the semi-final after Sabalenka coasted through her quarterfinal against American Madison Keys, winning in straight sets 6-2, 6-4. On the men's side of the draw, there are 2 matches ongoing at the moment. Carlos Alcaraz, the top seed, won the first set against Holger Rune 7-6, second set 6-4, currently leads the third set 3-2. So it looks like he'll be going through in straight sets if it goes to form. There was a bit of an upset on the cards in the other match between Christopher Eubanks, who was a bit of an unknown commodity before a ball was hit in the tournament. He was 2 sets apiece with third seed Daniel Medvedev. However, in the final set, Russian Medvedev is leading 5-1. So unfortunately,
it's 6-1. It's done now.
It's done now. 6-1. Yeah. So unfortunately, no upsets there like there were yesterday. However, Nadine, you were over at Wimbledon. How was it?
It was amazing, yeah. We were 2 of the crazy people who queued up for 5 hours.
But we had Stephen Higgins on about talking about all the chaos. It wasn't great.
Well, no, to be honest, we were there Thursday. So I think earlier in the week, it was really crazy. People were queuing for 2 hours. We were keeping an eye on Twitter and we were in a big panic that we wouldn't get in at all. But we came prepared. We had our picnic. We had our blankets. We had a few light refreshments, let's say, to get us through the couple of hours. So we queued in total from 8 until 1 o'clock. We got in there at 1 and it's so worth the chin. Like, it's just such a lovely buzz. There's a lovely atmosphere. Aesthetically, it's absolutely stunning. The people are so lovely. Like, everybody's just in great form. We got to see Katie Bolter, the English player, so there was a great atmosphere for that game. We got Matteo Berrettini, the Italian guy, and then we were on the hill for a significant portion of the day, and we got 2 of Murray's sets before the game was called off. It was called off like 11, restarted then the next day, and I actually saw him. I'd say I was about 10 metres away from him as he went into centre court. Happened to pass back. Now we saw his back for about 5 seconds.
Still we saw him.
But it's just something I'd highly recommend if people are interested in going over. Like, it's just great fun. It's just a great day out, and the organisation's brilliant. You know, I know queuing for 5 hours might seem very desperate to people, but it's £30 then to get in, and as I said, it's just a wonderful atmosphere. And where you're queue, and it's just a great setup. Like, there's a lovely lake there. It's in a park. Like, I got I got up at one stage and went for a walk. You know, went for a big walk for about an hour. So the time does fly. And for £30, I think it's a good bargain.
Absolutely. A few strawberries and pims.
A few pims. Yeah.
Good. Proper order. You were chilling out on Henman Hill. That actually leads me on to Paul Curry. I don't know if you've been to Wimbledon or because. You haven't been?
Not yet.
Okay. And that's funny because I believe you're a relation to Tim Henman, yeah, is it?
I would love to say I'm a relation to Tim Henman. My other half is a Henman.
Oh, okay.
And it came up probably about 3 months into the relationship when I turned to her and I said, "Any chance there, are you a relation to Tim?" I very casually mentioned that she was a second cousin. So
this didn't come up in the first date, right? No,
it didn't. I'm hoping that my experience is maybe a little different to the Dean's queuing outside. I'm hoping to actually be in the Royal Box next
time. Okay. You'll be waving down at us. Or out at us, on the screen.
I love the tennis as well. I'd love to go over, so there could be a message there.
Yeah, well, you might have to bring us all.
Yeah, this time
next
year.
The house, yeah. You'll be dialing in. You might put Stephen Higgins out of a job from Cross Court View. You'll be our official tennis correspondent.
I thought we weren't talking about that.
You've thrown me under the bus on many Shelburne-related things, Paul Curry. We've known each other for many years now, so I had to get that one in. Final bit of news. in Gaelic Games, as you may have heard on the bulletins throughout the evening with Jan at the news desk. Tom Ryan, president of the GAA, speaking before an Oireachtas committee today, says that the GAA have no intention of making all broadcast games available free to air. The income of €4 million per year via rights fees and subscriptions is significant, said Mr. Ryan. The GAA feel they are backed up by 1.3 million viewers thus far this year in the service. Ryan seems open to reviewing the pricing and access to the service at the conclusion of the current season. Notably, it was confirmed that both the GAA and RTÉ have yet to secure approval from the competition watchdog for the joint streaming service GAA Go to broadcast games domestically. So plenty of hearings to come, no doubt, but that was kind of the main chunks of the news this evening. Paul, I joke that you're going to be our tennis correspondent, but you are here to keep an eye on St. Pat's in Luxembourg this evening. Fergal Brennan will be joining us very shortly to chat football transfers first, but let us just review last night. Stephen Bradley still believes Shamrock Rovers can overturn their first leg deficit against Breda Blick and progress to the second qualifying round of the Champions League. Rovers' European campaign got off to a dismal start as they drew a blank for the third successive game, with Dabir Muminovic's thumping free kick clinching a deserved 1-0 win for the Icelandic champions. And Tala Bradley's side raised their game in the second half but struggled to create any clear-cut chances until late on, something they must remedy ahead of Tuesday's trip to Reykjavik. So what did you make of the game? Another... is it fair to say it was an under par performance, or
it was
just a poor performance yet again from Shamrock Rovers? Why?
I don't know. Like, I was looking at a lot of the debate online, and I would be probably of the opinion that they haven't been tested domestically, and that is going to impact maybe some of the performance levels that they're able to hit in European competitions. And some people say that's has a sort of basis to the argument. Other people don't believe it. I do think that is the case. I think, you know, if you look at the League of Ireland, they go out, they're able to kind of drop points and still have a 4-point gap at the top of the table. And I think that kind of carried itself into last night, Shane. I thought there was a real sort of... the performance was lethargic, particularly in the first half. There was no bite or aggression to their play. And Breda Blick came out and listen, they were very good. They were very expressive and they played through the thirds. Very, very creative side. But it was sort of made easy for them, particularly in that first half. You know, there was no sort of willingness from Shamrock Rovers to put a challenge in, to make things a little uncomfortable for Breda Blick, and they played into the Icelandic side's hands. So it's hard to know whether or not they have the performance in them to turn it around off in the second leg. On the basis of last night, I'd be very worried, to be honest with you, Shane. I think last night, when you look at the team in particular, having no Neil Ferguson, no Trevor Clark in those wide areas hinders them massively, because they need legs, they need energy from a wide standpoint in order to kind of open up room for the likes of Jack Byrne and Dylan Watson. Ronan Finn is a very good footballer. Sean Kavanagh is a beautiful left foot, but they don't have that same sort of energy or threat to get in behind teams and cause a threat in behind that Breda Blick back four. So it was a questionable performance. A number of individuals have come back from injury. I thought Jack looked a little off the pace. Gary O'Neill probably not at his usual levels, picked up a bit in the second half, and there was too many mistakes within the performance. Just look at the goal. Roy Gaffney wins a free kick, plays the ball or tries to get it, Jack Byrne. It's a conversion or a changeover of possession. Breda Blick get a free kick and the wall kind of falls to pieces for the strike. And I thought you're far more versed to make a judgment of this. I thought Liam Poles could have got a hand to it. Was it not a bit central?
Saw it late.
Yeah, maybe saw late and the wall didn't do him justice.
It was certainly central, but it was thumped.
Yeah, it was hit very well. I just thought it was, the ball didn't end up, you know, in the stanchion or in the top corner.
That's
thought fair. He might have been able to get a hand to it, but the wall probably didn't do him justice. But yeah, it was just a lethargic performance, and it's probably consistent with what we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
But is that not, there's a continuation of lethargic performances then, and the counterpoint to perhaps not being tested in the league? Yes, they are still top of the league, but by 4 points, but it's a very competitive league in terms of teams are taking points off each other. I mean, Rovers haven't beat Drogheda or Cork, who are 8 and 9. They've only won, I think I saw it was 52% of their matches all season. So is it not a case of they actually are being tested in the league, but they just haven't been stepping up to perform? Like, okay, league table doesn't lie, they're top of the table, but in terms of performances, and you need performances, 90 minute performances, perhaps 180 minute performances to get across in a European tie, that they've been lacking for Rovers.
They have, and a number of individuals, Shane, have probably not hit in the heights that we saw last year. That's through injury, but some of that is just through not being able to kind of shift through the gears and produce those performances. They're still 4 points clear of the league, though. Like, this is the issue, is that they've been allowed to not hit third or fourth gear and still maintain a gap. And that maybe gets into the psychology of a player that, okay, we can kind of be 50-60% here today and we still have enough that we can go on and win this league. Unfortunately, in sport, form is not something that you can switch on and off. I thought maybe playing against an opposition in European, the whole buzz around a Champions League fixture, the funds that are available, not only to the club, but also to the players, will kick them up a level or two. And they just weren't able to find it last night. And that was a bit of a worry. Yes, they're still without some personnel that I've mentioned previously, but the level of performance, when they've been good in Europe, they've been very sort of dogged about getting after opposition and they've been hassling and harry, particularly in Tala. And when they've had it, they've had an element of control. I thought both with and without the ball last night, they just didn't look at it. The goal is obviously something that you can rectify and you can maybe look back and say we can actually prevent that from happening. But from a Shamrock Rovers standpoint, creating chances, they had the Sean Kavanagh one in the second half and the Roy Gaffney one in the first half. Outside of that, I didn't think they created a huge amount, and that would be my worry heading into the second leg, where they have to travel away from home and they have to go and win.
Certainly was one of their more flatter performances in Europe. That was a match that a lot of people kind of expected Rovers to win. A lot of people expect Derry and Dundalk to win tomorrow night, but this evening Doolange Pats was eyed up as the tricky tie. So former Shelburne player Jamat Schaffner will be taking charge of Doolange for his first competitive game in management. The Americans, yeah, there you go. Never played a first team game for Shelburne, but was on the books. Therefore, that is factual information. The American style of play is practically unknown to John Daly and Pats because footage was hard to come by. Would you be sharing in the opinion that this is the tricky one here and Pats could slip up? We do actually have their team in for this evening. Dean Linus, Breslin, Lennon, Forrester, captains aside, Brockbank, Norman, Carty, McCormick, Mulrani, Curtis and Murphy. David Norman, the new signing from Canada, making his European debut. One of six players actually making their European debut for Pats. Like, I mean, how's this one going to play out in your opinion?
Well, what we said of Shamrock Rovers and not being in great form, the opposite is true of Pats. Since John Daly's gone in there, he's done wonders with that side, and they've won a huge number of games that they've been involved in, and they come into this chain with great confidence against Doolange. I guess the one thing that they have in their favour here is that Doolange are somewhat in pre-season, and you know, St. Pat's are probably kicking into gear, whereby we're in the middle of our season, they should be all guns firing. And I like the team that he's gone with. I think there's enough kind of balance between youth and energy, and then you've kind of got the experience of the likes of Lennon and Forrester that can anchor that midfield and try to dictate things. UCD beat Doolange, am I right in saying Bowes beat Doolange in the last couple of years as well? They're probably not a side that you would look and fear too much, I would say, and I would expect that Pats over two legs should go through. I think just purely on the basis of the form that they've shown in recent weeks, Mulraney is absolutely on fire as well. You know, if you're talking of players who are playing very well, he is one. If you're Jonathan Daly, you're just saying get the ball to him in wide areas and let him go create and cause havoc. And I think they'll do well tonight. A positive result here, Shane, is just coming back with the scoreline level. And you would fancy then if Pat's at home level in that second leg that they would go through and qualify. I fancy them there. I think of all the teams that are involved, Derry and Dundalk have been littered with inconsistencies in the last couple of months. Shamrock Rovers the same. Pat's are the team I fancy out of all four to go through.
Okay, Pat's certainly on a crest of a wave. Forrester captaining the side for 16th European appearance. Paul, you're going to be keeping an eye on that one. Kickoff is in 8 minutes and 40 seconds time, so you'll be keeping us up to date with that one. However, Fergal Brennan is on the line. Fergal, thanks for joining us. You have a transfer wrap for us, I suppose, starting with a transfer yesterday happened when we came off air. I want to start with it because it concerns an Irish player, Ryan Manning, to Southampton. Is that a good move for Manning?
I think it is, in terms of where Southampton will be anticipating to be at the end of the season. I think Swansea have been kind of on the edge of the playoff conversation, and generally they've fallen short during his time there. Southampton, based on the parachute money that they'll be getting dropping out of the Premier League, and the fact that they do still have a squad with a number of Premier League, maybe not necessarily quality level players, but certainly experience level. He'll go in there. Obviously, he's following Russell Martin, who was his manager at Swansea. I think it's a big positive for him. I don't think there was a significant amount of Premier League interest in him. And if you're going to stay in the Championship, you don't want it to be a sideways move. You want it to be as much of a bit of a step up as possible. And Southampton will, by virtue of the fact that they are a Premier League side, or sorry, they were a Premier League side last season, they'll be in a stronger position for promotion. And I would say by that kind of measurement, it is a positive move for Ryan.
Well, as Keith Tracy mentioned yesterday, it's a good move if he gets game time. So here's hoping that Ryan Manning will get plenty of game time at Southampton. Fergal, there's plenty other transfers and rumours and gossip ongoing at the moment. I suppose, what catches your eye?
I think the ongoing Saudi Pro League investment and in terms of looking to lure big name players is going to keep catching attention. The latest one over the last 24 hours has been Paul Pogba from Juventus. He's been linked with Al Ahly. Obviously, with the amount of players moving to Saudi Arabia, it's kind of difficult to remember who's gone where. So Al Ahly have signed Edouard Mendy from Chelsea and then Roberto Firmino on a free transfer. They've reportedly offered Juventus $10 million. But more importantly, they've offered Pogba $128 million over 3 years in terms of a contract. It was a difficult return for him last year. He had a very serious injury and then he had a couple more smaller injuries. I think I read a stat this morning, something like he played 150, 160 league minutes. And I think given the fact that they re-signed him on a free transfer from United and obviously got a huge fee for him when he went to United in 2016, they'd be happy to take this. I think if he's happy to accept a move from Italy to Saudi Arabia, Juventus are happy to give that the green light. And this would kind of continue that that list of players. I think everyone expected certain players at certain points of their career to make that move to Saudi Arabia, but we're seeing the current Ballon d'Or winner and Karim Benzema already going out there, and now we're seeing potentially a former world transfer record heading out there. So in terms of kind of a big story jumping out, that would be one. There's a couple of others bodding around in terms of internal Premier League ones. Dean Henderson has been linked with going back to Nottingham Forest on a permanent deal. I don't think he has a future at Manchester United. David De Gea is gone, and Erik ten Hag has not really made any noises that Henderson is the guy to replace him. He wants Andre Onana from Inter Milan, and there's maybe one or two backup options that would still be over Henderson. So I think he finds himself in a situation of, if he wants to play Premier League football, it's not going to be at Manchester United. If he could go back to Forest and be first choice there, it would be a positive step for his career.
My final question on the transfer front to you, Fergal. Aston Villa have announced the signing of Villarreal Spain centre-back Pau Torres, 24 years of age, undisclosed fee. Good move for Villa?
I think so. I think he's been arguably one of the best defenders in La Liga for the last couple of seasons, maybe because he plays for Villarreal and doesn't play for Barcelona or Real Madrid. He maybe isn't as well known to Premier League fans, but he's a really good player, very calm and composed on the ball, and I think he'll dovetail into what Unai Emery is trying to build there. A big feature of them at the back end of last season was players praising his defensive coaching and getting them drilled and having an offside line and not making silly errors. If he fancies Pau Torres, obviously he's managed him before, then you would look at that as being a positive move, and I think he's a really, really good player. That's Villa's objective this season, to make that jump from being on the edge of the European conversation to being in it, to being confident with, let's say, 6 weeks of the season to go, that they're either Europa League or Europa Conference League. And I think he'll do something for them.
Okay, we'll be interesting to see. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. Paul Curry, 51552 is a text number. We have a text in. I think someone that agrees with you about perhaps the goalkeeper being at fault. Shamrock Rovers last night looked like 11 fellas Bradley met at the Old Bond bus stop and said, fancy game of football. We were told they had plenty of goalkeeping options, yet when Westwood turned them down, there was no plan B. Shocking stuff. Now they have a stadium and no bloody team. However, Todd Bazunu was warming up with the goalkeepers, only 16 years of age. Gavin Bazunu's younger brother as well. The future might be bright in the goalkeeping front for Rovers.
Yeah, I mean, putting a lot of pressure on young Todd there. Leon Poles has done okay in recent weeks. I think there is a big gap though between himself and Alan Manus, and the relationship that Manus has with the back three, the games they've won, the trophies they've won. When his presence isn't there, they certainly feel it. Kieran Westwood's an interesting one, played with him at Sheffield Wednesday. My understanding is that Kieran Westwood's family live in the UK, and it just wasn't an option for him to come to Shamrock Rovers and live in Dublin. Mm. But yeah, that is questionable whether or not they should have replaced. They're going to have to eventually replace Alan Manus because he hasn't got too many years left in the bank. Who they go to, I'm not too sure.
Well, it will be interesting to see Manus back from injury, so he could feature on Tuesday. Paul, you're sticking around, keeping an update on Doolange Pats. Nadine will be joined by Aoife Murray after the break because we're going to chat football, camogie, and an update on the ongoing protest for women's intercounty players against governing bodies.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to Game On. Nadine Doherty is in studio. Aoife Murray joins me on the line as well because we're going to chat football and camogie. But first, Nadine, if I come to you, the GPA released a statement today in light of some revelations at the Oireachtas Committee today. So the statement says, the players welcome today's public clarification by GA Director General Tom Ryan at the Joint Committee for Tourism, Culture, Arts, Sport and Media that the GA are willing to help establish a female charter should they be so asked by the LGFA and Camogie Association. It has always been the players' view that the GA would have to play a role, and it is encouraging that they have now made their willingness to do so known on the public record. The ball is clearly now in the LGFA and Camogie Association's court. Strong words.
Yes, very welcome words, because as the GPA have highlighted there in their statement, it's out there, it's in the public forum now. What it does insinuate, Shane, is that LGFA and the Camogie Association haven't reached out perhaps to the GA yet, which is surprising and disappointing. I think it's a bit of a poor reflection on the female codes, to be honest, that it's the GAA who represent the men's code who have come out here first in public and stated that they're willing to begin discussions. There's just been complete silence, I suppose, in the public domain anyway. Perhaps it's different behind closed doors, from the LGFA and Camogie Association, since, well, what I would have felt, the LGFA's initial statement was very defensive, I think, and I've spoken about this before. It highlighted yet again the huge disconnect between the association and their players. And listen, if they don't engage in these talks, which the GA have offered, they're continuing to delay basically what are basic rights for their own playing members. And I think if they don't engage now and they don't engage soon, then they're just giving the players no option but to continue to take further action over the coming weeks. And it's just getting a little bit embarrassing, Shane. And I just wonder, you know, why are they not listening to their players at this stage? Mm. It's beyond belief, because the players have highlighted over and over and over again, all they want to do is start discussions. That's all they want to do, start discussions and see where it goes from there.
Absolutely. If I bring Aoife Murray into the conversation as well, and Aoife, just to mention as well, kind of a development from the players' point of view, that female intercounty players will not participate in any media event organised by either the LGFA or Camogie Association for the duration of the All-Ireland Championships. While the GPA will facilitate media access to players, the decision of players to withdraw from media events organised by the two governing bodies, particularly in advance of the All-Ireland Finals, will undoubtedly hurt coverage of these deciders. Is this perhaps, Aoife, just one of a couple of more steps and ramping up the protests that we might see now?
Well, I think that announcement in regards to the media being managed through maybe a call through the GPA rather than through the two governing bodies, like, that came out before we got the sound bites and the quotes from the Oireachtas Committee today. So if that's where the players had gone before listening to Tom Ryan, I would wonder where they'll go for their next move. And I think I have to say that a lot of this isn't from the want of the players, in the sense of they don't want to have to do this. But I think listening to Tom Ryan today, listening to the senior administrative from the Camogie and the GAA, Liz Howard last week, about, as I said, about using the honey approach to female athletes, you wonder how they're not even going stronger, to be honest, Shane, on it. And I completely agree with everything that Nadine has said there. And you wonder why the two governing bodies have gone into hiding, and now we're hearing from Tom Ryan. And actually, one of the questions that was asked of Tom Ryan today was, you know, have they asked you to intervene? And his response back, and this is probably what was the most frightening thing to me, was quite the opposite. That was his response. What does quite the opposite mean? To me, it's more, not even disappointing. I think even disappointing doesn't even touch the sides of this. Because it's not like the players are looking to go professional here. They just want minimum standards. I've had players come to me and say, geez, Aoife, all I want is a facility to shower. Like, this is what we're talking about, Shane. We are not talking about any luxuries or anything. It is purely down to facilities. Can I actually have a shower after training before I get into the car and travel 2 hours? And I think today, listening to Tom Ryan, listening to those questionings and to some of those responses, you would nearly question that. I think the players are being extremely patient. And I think it just shows how much they want to play this game, and to have their two governing bodies, one, as Nadine said, go defensive and completely disconnect from the players. We do not have a game without the players. And again, as I said last week, this is the generation that's going to change this game for the good of the future generations to come, and I couldn't be prouder of the players.
Yeah, Aoife, again, I agree with and echo everything you've said there. And I think in terms of the player stance now and not taking part in media events, it's welcome. But I think it has to be highlighted as well. You know, it might also show up that both associations, I suppose, in comparison to the GAA, their coverage at times is quite limited. Their marketing strategies, and you know, okay, when it comes to the finals, absolutely, the whole country knows that there's an All Ireland final coming up. But if the LGFA and the Camogie Association want to start generating finances, then they have to get people into games, not just Croke Park and All Ireland Final Day. It has to be throughout the year. It has to be league. It has to be championship. And you know, I feel that huge improvements can be made there. So why not sit down with the players and look at developing not only a charter but also improvements in promoting the game, because we both know there are players out there who would take the hand off you to promote the game, but they just, I feel in a way, you know, they don't get enough opportunities. League, obviously, the league launch is excellent, the championship launch is excellent, and as I said, the promotion for the final, the league final, the All-Ireland final, all excellent. But in between that, I think there's a huge, huge gap that both associations can really work with their players to up the game, really.
Completely. And look, I'm not in marketing or anything, but the product here are the players. It's the sport, right? And you don't have a sport without the players. I can't. I'm completely lost. I can't understand how both associations don't realise that actually, one, we're sitting on two of the best female sports across the world, right? And we have some of the best athletes across the world. And yet we are not using our athletes at all to promote our game. And I completely agree. This can't be just about filling Croke Park or hitting a record with attendances in Croke Park. This is about Nolan Park Saturday week, Nadine.
Yeah.
Can the Camogie Association, through all of their connections, can they get 15,000 to 20,000 people fill out Nolan Park for what will be two unbelievable games? Honestly, two finals in one game to see who goes to Croke Park at the end of this. And can they get that stadium filled?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that is where it has to start. And I do want to highlight, you know, great work has been done. Absolutely. And there's great promotion at certain times, but there can always, always be improvements. And I think part of these charter discussions, as I've already said, have to also go side by side with the promotion of the game, because that means exposure, that means capital, that means funding, and that means that the players will get looked after the way they should.
Absolutely, so, yeah. Absolutely. So it will be interesting to see what comes of it. Aoife, you mentioned games in a couple of weeks' time. Tip Waterford and Cork Galway are the two semi-finals, two cracking matches that they are going to be. Mm-hmm. And they are the fixtures because, if we are to reflect on last weekend's action on Sunday, Cork defeating Kilkenny by a single point. Plenty of drama in that one. If I just get your thoughts on Brian Dowling stepping down as Kilkenny Camogie manager after that match. Four seasons in charge, two All-Ireland titles, twice manager of the year, both in those All-Ireland winning seasons. Did that news come as a surprise to you, Aoife?
I don't know, was it a surprise, but in many ways it was almost like a disappointment, because I think what he has done in Kilkenny has been absolutely outstanding. I think you could really sense, as somebody who's played against his teams, I think you could really sense that relationship that he had with the players. And certainly I think it showed in a huge amount of those wins that they've had over the years. And even before he became manager, he was in the backroom team. So he has committed a huge number of years to Kilkenny Camogie. I definitely, as a supporter and follower of the Camogie, would like to thank him for all the years that he's put in. He's had some of the best players, but he's got the best out of his best players. And that's a hard job. And I think it's a loss to Camogie. And I do wish him well. But certainly, I think him stepping away will absolutely be a loss to the game of Camogie.
On the match itself, then, controversy reigned at the end in a game that was a bit poor early on, to be fair, but really finished in just complete excitement and drama. So in the final minute of injury time, Kilkenny had strong claims for a foul on Katie Power inside the Cork 45-metre line, waved away. Then Cork had their own shout as well. I mean, there are very specific rules in Camogie as well in terms of, like, did you agree with the decisions that were made?
I would have thought the last foul would have been harsh, looking at how he's refereed the whole game, is probably how I would put it. I think some of the charging, it's a real hard rule to ref. It is the responsibility of the ball carrier to move. I thought Cliona Healy got hard done by. She tried to move out the way in another incident and got a free against her. So I think, look, some of the decisions were not the right call. But I'd nearly go back to say that first 20 minutes, really poor. Wasn't an exciting game. The last 40 minutes were so exciting. It was up and down the field. It's a lot for one person to ref. And I think we've said this about even football, hurling, ladies football, everything, that it's a lot to take on one person. For the incident with regard to Amy O'Connor when she, her jersey, in fairness, it was good, a good make of a jersey, because how it didn't rip off was beyond me, right? But as a former goalie, I couldn't say a whole lot against her.
Right. But, towing the union line, Aoife.
Right. I have to stand up for her there. She's absolutely dead right in what she did. But there's an umpire, there's a pitcher, and there's the umpire just standing directly behind us. And the ref is standing on the other side, and you're going, how could such an obvious foul be missed? But you're getting down to those tight ends of the games. I think, look, there's a certain time, I think, with referees where making a big call is the hardest thing to do. I think there was wrongs in a certain number of those calls. And you would worry looking forward to the semi-final that it doesn't frighten the rest of or the two referees that day, and all of a sudden we have, you know, two whistle happy games as well. Shane, I suppose that's the other side to it. But this is the joys of getting a bit more coverage. The eyes are on everybody, and in particular they will always go to the referee first. So I think this is a byproduct of the game getting more popular. But yeah, I think there was a number of calls just on the wrong side. But again, I would question what were the lines people and the umpires doing that day, and how much of an influence they could have had on helping the ref.
Yeah, I think Niall Moran was on with us on Monday's Reel, calling for assistant referees to have more of an input and more of a say. Mm-hmm. On the match itself, listen, we will be previewing Cork Galway in detail. But in terms of Cork progressing, deserved winners on the day?
Yeah, I think in fairness, the first 20 minutes, they were nowhere to be seen. It was Kilkenny were working the far better team. I think on the grand scheme of things, I do think that they deserved to come out with the win. But there was some serious battles and really intriguing clashes there, right? Because you had Grace Walsh and Katrina Mackey. Katrina Mackey was coming into that game in flying form. And I have to say, that first half, they were right down in front of me. Like, Mackey could not tie her shoelace, and Walsh would have been there untying the other one. Like, she literally marshalled her everywhere. But then second half changed. I think Mackie got the best of that battle. No different from, I think, the Libby and Denise Gall. I thought Libby had an excellent first half on her. But all Gall needed was 15 minutes. And she had literally dragged Kilkenny back into the fight. So what was really good, I think, Shane, was the match just ebbed and flowed in the last 40 minutes. The big difference for me in both teams were the impact off the bench for Cork. With Hayes coming on, Thomson, Cronin, and in particular, I think, Cliona Healy. I think that's where the game was dragged over the line for Cork.
Okay. In the other quarterfinal, a bit less drama. Koch Devan hit 2-6 to inspire Tip to a handy win over Antrim. Was this a bigger scoreline, I suppose, than most people expected?
Look, unfortunately, I don't think so, Shane. Okay. I don't think so. I think even how we looked at it last week, saying that, you know, Antrim might try to put up a fight for 20 so minutes, but the strength, I think the fitness of Tipperary would win out. I think they were coming off of a pretty heavy defeat as well, and it's hard to pick yourself back up, go into, you know, a gorgeous big pitch to a flying Tip team. It was always going to be up against them. I have to say, though, like, the job that Elaine Dowds has done with them, you know, I don't think the scoreline actually shows the progression of Antrim either. I think they have a number of injuries, so, you know, they found players like McKillen, McLeod, McCormack, Dobbins, etc. And because they had to drag those players back and continuously rotate, you know, a very tight full forward line, bring those players back, they were never going to, you know, for them to get into double scorers, 10 points plus, it was going to be a tall order, especially when you have the likes of Cote Devan absolutely lording it out there. And look, for one, again, as a supporter of Camogie, it's great to see players like Cáith Devan actually get that time, I suppose, get that prime time TV viewing just to show what an absolute outstanding Camogie player is. Some of the scores that she did, I think, were you'd be proud of them any day.
Absolutely. Tougher test to come in the form of Waterford in a semi-final. As mentioned, two crackers, tip Waterford, Cork, Galway in a couple of weeks. We'll be previewing that in due course. Aoife Murray, thanks as always for taking the call. Just before we hit an ad break, Paul Corry, there are about, 15 minutes gone of the Pats match. How's it going?
Yeah, standard's not been great, to be honest with you, Shane. I guess from a Pats point of view, there's nothing to fear here. Doodle-Ange are very physical, but not the best on the ball. So I'm sure Pats will feel their way into this game. There should be chances there for them, and I would expect, based on the first 15 minutes, that they should have more than enough to get through over two legs.
Okay, good stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and then Nadine Doherty is going to be previewing the All-Ireland quarterfinals.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty, as promised, you're going to be previewing the All-Ireland quarter-finals. Galway, Mayo, Armagh, Cork, Kerry, Mead, and a small matter of Donegal, Dublin on the Sunday, then after those three matches on the Saturday. Let us start off chronologically. Galway, Mayo, 1:30 in Salt Hill this Saturday. Mayo won the Connacht final between these two sides, and they won it fairly handy. So where are the teams now compared to where they were then? Will it be a case of more the same come Saturday afternoon?
I don't know. I'm meant to know, aren't I? But I
really, that's what we're paying for.
That's what you're paying for. Like, historically with these teams, Shane, you know, they're so close in terms of ability and performance. Mm. But when they play each other, you'd always find that one team almost collapses at some point and the win margin is fairly significant. I'm not sure if that is going to be the story this weekend, but in terms of both teams, they have developed their game plans significantly, I feel, since the league for the championship, and especially in attack. You know, I would have spoken about Galway, I suppose, in the league. They really focused on their defence. They had it very, very tight, but they've made a few changes in their attack, and I suppose most significantly has been Alva Davern moving from midfield into full forward. And similarly, Mayo, I suppose, have changed the focus of their attack with the addition of Deirdre Doherty in a full forward. So they've both improved in that way. But looking at that Mayo attack, I really like watching Mayo play. You know, they have individuals up there and individuals who can come off the bench as well. And they just have this ability to create scores from anywhere. You know, they're very good from long range. They're very good at creating goal chances. Now against Armagh, they didn't convert them, but they should if they do again this weekend. And I suppose with Galway, they've committed more to their attack as well. They've moved off that defensive structure. And while they are conceding a little bit more, they're scoring a lot more. They're scoring what they should be scoring. And what they have, and I feel, might just edge them a little bit. They have these big, big game players who are really coming into their own now. You know, the Wards, like Nicola Ward there has been playing phenomenally. Louise Ward, Hannah Noon has really come into herself at midfield, and Sarah Nalunchig at full back will have her hands full, but she's very capable. But look, Mayo have huge strengths as well. They're very good. They're very organised with their high press, and a really important and significant line for them is their half-back line of Fiona McHale, Ciara Needham and Catherine Sullivan. All very experienced players, all players who've had big impact so far in the championship. So to be honest, Shane, like, it's really, really tight to call, but you know, being pushed, I think Galway could edge it. You know, and I have been talking about them since the start of the year, but I really, and I'm not even covering my back here, I wouldn't be surprised if Mayo edged it as well. Maybe the home advantage with Galway might play a bit of a part, but it's really hard to call. But it will be, look, like all of these quarterfinals, it'll be a brilliant game.
Okay, no, I completely take your point. That's not sitting on the fence at all. Two teams, no, genuinely, I mean that sincerely. Yeah. Two teams with a lot of talent there, but perhaps Galway might nick it with home advantage. Armagh, Cork, 3:30. Will home advantage be that extra lift Armagh need to get over the line against a potent Cork side?
Yeah, I mean, Armagh play very well at home. They don't fear Cork. They've knocked Cork out of the championship in the last couple of years. It's been a difficult week for Cork, I feel, in terms of preparation. Ciara Sullivan had that red card rescinded, as far as I know. And unfortunately, I think Emer Kiley's injury, she hurt her knee in the last game, and I don't think that's good. And I think that'll be a huge blow to Cork. But in saying that, I feel that Cork have an edge. Their attack has just been so good this year, Shane. They really mix it up. You know, no more than Mayo, they have an ability to run at teams. They love kicking the ball long. It works them. They just score goals for fun. I feel they've been averaging 2 or 3 goals a game. And with that, both defences have been leaky enough at times, but I just think that Cork attack has a huge potential to expose the Armagh defensive line. The middle third as well, I think, would be a huge battle. It's nearly two contrasting ways of playing football. You have Hannah Looney, Marie O'Callaghan, real big physical mobile players, you know, they love to get stuck in, and Ciara Sullivan drops back, and then they'll be facing up against Blaheen Mack and Eve Laverty, Neve Coleman, players who love to kick the ball, who love to give and go. So that'll be a big, big interesting battle in there. But I feel the Cork probably hold the edge in there as well, and I would be tipping them to get through this weekend.
Okay. Then at 7:30 on Saturday, Kerry versus Meath, repeat of the 2022 All-Ireland final. And when these teams meet come Saturday, they're meeting at a time when both teams are finding form.
Yes, very much so. And it's a game that Kerry have been waiting for almost a year. Did they think they'd be playing Meath in a quarterfinal at home in Tralee? Unlikely. I'd say they were gearing up for a final in Croke Park, but that's the way the draw goes. I think this one, Shane, is a huge test of character for both teams. Okay. I mean, Kerry have obviously shown form football-wise. We know what they're capable of on the pitch. They had that huge dip in Munster. They've recovered. Meath, with their new management team, well, I suppose it's an old management team in terms of their trainers, it's given them a huge lift. And they were unfortunate against Donegal. While Donegal, I feel, deserved the win, but they started to show that form again, and Emma Duggan is really coming into herself again. I know we mention her all the time, but she has been massive for Meath. I think how Kerry set up at the start is going to be an indication of where they're at in terms of belief in their own game plan. I think if they drop back and allow Meath a free restart and a short kick out, I think they'll be playing tense. But if they push up and really, really hit the high press on Meath, I think Kerry will be up for this game. And I just think with Meath as well, and Namur Donegal will get onto it, their group was significantly tighter than any other group. You know, Waterford were a very tough team for both Meath and Donegal, whereas Kerry had an easy game against Cavan. Obviously, they were very good against Dublin. But look, I'm going to edge Meath with this one, and I'd say the rest of the country will disagree with me, but I just think that they have something deep down psychologically that not many teams have left in the championship. And I think while it's a massive, massive task for them, I think that could edge them.
Well, many people might disagree with you on that prediction. There's something that I disagreed with you a few weeks ago, and that was our disagreement on Donegal being All-Ireland contenders. Yet here we are, previewing a quarterfinal, Nadine, where Donegal are hosting Dublin on Sunday at 2 p.m. in the fortress that is Ballybuffet.
Yeah, the Battle of Albuffet. I think that's what somebody said to me this week. Listen, they had a lot to prove, and they've proven that. And it's a championship that's wide open, Shane. And I would feel with Donegal, they have been the most consistent team since the provincial finals in terms of implementing the game plan that they want to play. Yeah, listen, they are contenders now at this stage. And I think, interestingly, with this fixture, you know, I feel that Dublin would have wanted to have been drawn against anybody except away to Donegal. Look, we know the history between the two teams, but I think on the pitch, a few different factors will be, you know, with Donegal, I think what they really, you know, are going to find difficult is this Dublin attack. It's so, so mobile, and they haven't come up against an attack that I suppose plays in this way. I mean, the Dublin attack always plays the way they're facing. They go direct. They have really speedy players who like to carry the ball. I mean, Carla Rowe, Kate Sullivan, Caoimhe O'Connor. And, you know, the Donegal full-back line, I suppose it gets massive protection. A lot of players come back. And, you know, young Temple Asoko there at full-back, I think she's 18. She's been playing brilliantly, but she has essentially had a bit of a free role for Donegal. She's going to have Hannah Turrell in there, Carla Rowe, but I expect Katie Hearn, who has been absolutely brilliant in the last couple of games, I think she'll continue to drop back and give protection there. So look, if Donegal can deal with that Dublin attack, they'll set themselves up really, really well. And look, I think Donegal's strength as well is in the middle third. You have Nicole McLaughlin, you have Katie, who I just mentioned, and there's Niamh McLaughlin, Shane, who, to me, there's just nobody on her level at the minute. Donegal, I think, will look to attack the Dublin kick out. It's been fragile at times. I think they'll push up on that. They'll go a full press. And listen, in the past, Shane, I suppose these games have been very stop-start. They've been littered with frees around the middle third, whether intentional or not. I expect that to continue on Sunday. And look, I'm going to say it. I just feel with this group, it's Donegal's game to lose now at this stage. They've home advantage. I hope I don't curse them. I always do when I tip them. But again, as I said about Meath, you know, Donegal were tested against Waterford. They were tested against Meath, whereas essentially, you know, Dublin, they lost to Kerry. They lost that challenge, but they regrouped. And then I suppose against Cavan, the team even that they put out against Cavan signalled that it wasn't going to be a massive test. So we will see. But I think it's, has to be Donegal at this stage, and they've all those players back, and those girls, as I've said before, they're not back to win in Balbofay, they're back for bigger things.
Okay, will be interesting to see. We'll be chatting next Wednesday on that. Just in a word, there is a relegation semi-finals, Tip Waterford and Laois Cavan. Who are the two teams that are going to win and avoid the relegation final?
Yeah, I think, you know, Waterford obviously I feel are very unlucky to be there. In terms of performances, you'd probably have to look at Cavan have probably been the weakest, but it's wide open. And you know, Laois, they're just up from intermediate, they don't want to be going straight back down. And I suppose with Tipperary, if Ashley Maloney has departed for the AFLW already, that's a big blow to them. Perhaps she's still here. If she's still here for the relegation, then that puts them in a nice position, but it'll be tough for everybody.
Okay, great stuff, Nadine, thank you very much. Paul, just before we finish up, there's been a goal in Luxembourg.
There has been, and it's not good news, Shane. It's Pats have gone 1-0 behind to Doodle-Ange. It was a well-worked goal, to be fair. It's probably the first bit of quality that we've seen within the game, but just too much space on the edge of the 18-yard box, and it was a midfielder, Van Lingen, who just stroked a pass, Linus. So work to do here for Pats.
Okay. Disappointing for Pats. Okay, Paul Corrie, thank you very much. Nadine Doherty, thank you very much. Big thanks to Fergal Brown and Aoife Murray earlier, and big thanks to you for tuning in. I'll be back next week, but do stay tuned to 2FM tomorrow from 6 o'clock. Bennett De Silva's up next, but first we're going to take a short ad break and check in with the news desk.